step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. Okay, Emma, so what is your true crime chat this week for me and our listeners?
Okay, so while I've been cleaning my house and doing little chores this week, I don't know if you've gotten into TikTok as much as I have, but I find it quite good for, well, to be fair, I find it good for sucking up time when I was meant to be doing other things. I fall in the hole of TikTok and then emerge hours later, dazed, confused, and wondering what day it is. Yeah, exactly. However, I have stumbled onto true crime TikTok because a friend of ours, Emily from Morbidology, she has started doing TikToks as well. I then just looked at the true crime TikTok hashtag and found a bunch. So there's one and it's spooky_sleuth. So have you heard of or listened to the podcast Three Spooked Girls? It's quite big in America.
I haven't.
So it's a true crime podcast. I haven't listened to much of it, or I haven't listened to it for a long time. I did remember enjoying it, but anyway, I'm enjoying her TikTok. So they're obviously shorter videos, but easier to get into, and you can see the person speaking. So if that's something that you're interested in, it's good to just put on the background and listen to. So I actually do recommend just going to TikTok, popping in the hashtag true crime TikTok and just seeing what's on there, because there is some really good content. And some of them are people's true stories, a bit like your Let's Not Meet. I think I sent you one the other week, and it was about a woman and her husband had gone camping. And she, so basically the story tagline at the top was how I found out my husband and I nearly got murdered or something like that. And she goes through it in these various videos talking about her and her husband, like a storytelling way. They were going camping and this man was following them on all this kind of thing. And anyway, it transpires that he was out on psychiatric release and had a knife and was literally going to murder them. But she tells the story much more interesting way than that. And it's really, really good to watch. But yeah, just another thing for people if they want to put stuff on while they're doing some chores, or just to distract them on a little break that they're having. Or as I saw, I saw a TikTok that said TikTok is for pooping. And it fully believes that people like to sit on the toilet and scroll through TikToks, which I thought was really, really funny. So yeah, for whatever you need it for, there are some kind of short little videos on there that you might enjoy, since you're a true crime fan.
It's nice to have another platform to consume true crime on.
It is, yeah, because we don't
it's
have
just different format.
Those. They're shorter, so sometimes you don't have the brain power or the time, and you don't want to get as invested. Like, if, you know, there's a time and a place for a long podcast or a documentary or reading a book or something like that. And then I think there is a time and a place for the shorter YouTube videos that I quite like, maybe 15 minutes long. You know, like I said, once again, maybe I'm cleaning the bathroom or I'm doing something that's, you know, a chore and I want something in the background. It might be something I already know about, but I just want to kind of have it on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And I think TikTok's a little bit like that for me. Yeah.
Interesting. I might need to have a look because I typically avoid it for that same reason, and that it's just a time sink for me. I, you know, get on the app and like 3 hours later, I'm like, wait, what happened? Where did I go? Like, what, how did the time pass so quickly?
It's like the Men in Black came up and did their flasher thing on you. Yeah, your memory's wiped. Yeah, I get that. So I said, oh, really, really quickly. Sorry, just to interrupt. For something for that is very useful, a tool that I have found for both my work life and my home life, I struggle with motivation to do tasks that I don't like, and I have found a tool, a psychology tool called a Pomodoro. And what
yes,
it is,
I know it.
Yeah, I've used it before. So in case anybody doesn't know about it, there's various timers apps that you can use. I use one on the laptop, and it is literally just 25 minutes on a timer for you to do the task that you want to do. If you get intrusive thoughts, which I do, I constantly think about other things while I'm meant to be doing something, you write them down and you discard them and you keep doing your task. If people around you are prone to interrupting you, you can literally explain the concept to them and say, don't interrupt me, I'm going to do a Pomodoro, and they'll leave you alone. And then when it's done, you can have a short break, a long break, or perhaps you just go straight on to the next one, because sometimes you find once you've started it, you're then super motivated, hyper-focused, and you'll get stuff done. There you go. That's my little recommendation and tip for the day. Anyway, Joanna, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say it's funny you should say it because Sean uses it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So basically, really he has this little timer which he uses, and it's like a sort of hexagon timer thing. And I think his is maybe set to like 20 minutes or something. I think it's 20 minutes of work and 10 minutes of break or something like that.
It's a similar concept then, yeah.
Yeah. So he just sets it so that he knows that he's effectively working while it's on, and then, you know, he has break after it. I actually I didn't know about Pomodoros, but I just happened to try something myself before when I was studying, because I found I was just, I'd really procrastinate, I would struggle, I would sit for hours and get very little done, and just, yeah, really struggled. And I sort of decided, like I say, I didn't know about Pomodoros at the time, but I decided to start using a stopwatch on my phone. Mm-hmm. And anytime I got an interruption or picked up my phone and looked at it, or, you know, did something that wasn't studying, I would pause the timer. And then, you know, it would kind of, it helped me realize that, you know, in an hour of sitting where I'm supposed to be doing studying, if I'd look at the timer, I'd be like, in an hour, you know, I've maybe done like 12 minutes of studying. Yeah. And that I would be like, well, that's such a waste. So it helps me be more productive that way. But yeah, I do like the idea of Pomodoros, I think, especially if you struggle to focus and stuff like that.
Do you know
that,
why so. They're called that?
No, I don't.
They're called that because it was an Italian psychologist that coined the idea. And in Italy, they're food timers. So we've got the leg timers, and they're in different shapes. Their food timers are in the shape of a tomato, and Pomodoro is Italian for tomato.
Oh!
So they're little tomato
timers.
Ah. Kind of want a tomato timer, but I actually think they're quite shrill and they scare me, you know, when they go off.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's I don't want to do another Pomodoro. This is terrifying. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Just never work ever again for fear of the sound.
That's really funny. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm full of useless facts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So my case this week is the case of Linda Hunter. Are you aware of Emma?
Is it something? I'm aware of it. I'm not familiar with the full details,
the circumstances, though. Okay. Cool. All right. So Linda Hunter, she was a 30-year-old woman who lived in Carnoustie, which is 12 miles north of Dundee. She had a dog named Shep who went everywhere with her. He was a 14-year-old collie cross and in a little bit of poor health, so he took medication.
Aww.
Yeah. She was married to her husband Andrew, who she wed in November 1986. Linda was a manager of a residential home for the elderly in Dundee and often worked night shifts. She'd recently found out that she was around 6 weeks pregnant and was in high spirits, though the pregnancy was making her poorly. She drove to the local golf course every morning to walk Shep on a nearby beach. Linda's parents lived in Glenrothes, which is in Fife, and weren't in great health, so she called them almost every other day. At 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, the 20th of August, 1987, Linda phoned her mum and told her that she'd been feeling sick with pregnancy. Both Linda and her husband Andrew had the Friday off work, but Linda stayed in bed the following morning, feeling poorly. Andrew's son had a friend stay over the previous evening. Andrew got up and tended to them, making them breakfast before they left at 8:20 a.m. to get the bus to school. At around 10 a.m, Andrew drove Linda to the chemist so she could pick something up for her morning sickness. Unfortunately, the chemist couldn't give her anything suitable and suggested she see her doctor instead. Linda then called in at her doctor's surgery and asked for a prescription, but the receptionist advised that the doctor would likely want to see Linda for an appointment before prescribing anything and asked her to call back later. Andrew drove Linda home and she apparently began putting her things together for the following day's night shift at work. It was claimed that Linda then said she was going to her parents to tell them the news of the baby, but was not seen again. She sometimes stayed with her parents in Glenrothes, but they weren't expecting her. Linda's sister Sandra was also due to visit. The next morning, on Saturday 22nd of August, Linda's car, a white Vauxhall Cavalier Antibes, was found in central Manchester behind a train station. A parking warden issued a ticket for the car and a police officer called it in the following evening after seeing the car had been broken into and the cassette radio stolen.
Wait, Manchester in England? How far a drive is that? How long does that take?
Hundreds of
miles. That's got to be like eight hours, something like that?
It's a hell of a drive, yeah.
Jeez, oh.
So, local police were informed that the car belonged to a missing woman and the car was inspected. They found that the driver's seat was pushed back, which indicated that someone taller than Linda had last driven it. They also found the grey seat covers missing from the front seats, the passenger floor mat missing, and the spare tyre fitted to the front driver's side. The tools for changing the tyre were missing, along with the presumably flat tyre. Linda's belongings were found in the boot of the car, along with Shep's medication. Credit cards and around £30 in cash were missing from Linda's purse. One of Linda's earrings was also found in the boot. On the 8th of December 1987, Crime Watch produced a reenactment of the sequence of events and appealed to the public for help in finding Linda and Shep. It was the first Scottish case to feature on BBC Crime Watch. A week earlier, on 13th of August 1987, Linda had travelled, presumably to Glenrothes, to give her sister the news of her pregnancy. The Daily Record reported that although it should have been a celebration, it turned into a complaint, with Linda revealing how bad her marriage was. Andrew had been married previously. He and his wife Christine and son had moved to Broughty Ferry in 1977, moving in opposite Linda, who was then Linda Cairns, and her partner Dr. Ian Glover. At the time, Andrew worked in a children's home and was studying part-time for a social work qualification. Linda was qualified in social work and offered to help Andrew with his studies. The two eventually began an affair, and sometime later, Linda bought a home in Carnoustie and expected Andrew to move in with her. He eventually did, though apparently spent some time between his wife and Linda to begin with.
Oh, sounds really messy, doesn't it?
Yep.
Nightmare.
In December 1984, Andrew's ex-wife Christine reportedly dropped her son off at Andrew's work for them to spend time together. After going to the cinema, Andrew apparently travelled to his ex-wife's home to drop off his son, but there was no answer at the door. It was reported that, after calling on a neighbour who had a spare key, they entered the house to find Christine hanging from the loft hatch, and a verdict of death by suicide was eventually recorded.
This is looking suspicious, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Following the death of his ex-wife, the relationship between Linda and Andrew apparently deteriorated, and he would often assault her in public. It's also claimed that after this event, Andrew took up with a same-sex partner he had been involved with previously, used sex workers, and became involved with a 22-year-old drug addict he'd met through his work. It is assumed that things began to improve prior to their marriage on 1st of November 1986, and a honeymoon period followed before the couple's existing problems began to re-emerge. Andrew then apparently became involved with the woman he'd met through his work and was also using sex workers again. So they'd been involved, the relationship had been rocky, there'd obviously been a period of...
him doing what he wants by the sounds of it.
Yeah, but then a period of calm and things maybe improving. Yep. So they decided to get married. So they got married in November 1986, and this is the following August that she finds out she's pregnant.
Okay, okay. So how far on was she again? Sorry.
6 weeks.
So 6 weeks. Okay.
So she thinks she was about 6 weeks. So I think she just pretty much found out she was pregnant. And this is about, so this would be 9 months after the marriage.
They do say with abusive partners that finding out you're pregnant is one of the most dangerous things that can happen, don't they? I mean, correct me if I'm reading too much into it, but him abusing her in public. Mm-hmm. I don't know the details of it, but it sounds like not a healthy relationship.
100%. So Linda's sister travelled to Carnoustie to meet with her as planned on Friday the 21st of August 1987. However, was met by Andrew. He claimed that Linda had gone to see her parents in Glenrothes. After spending some time with Andrew, Sandra left around 7 p.m. Linda was apparently reported missing with her car and Shep the following day by her husband. The day Linda went missing, Andrew had been at work, was given a lift to and from a works night out by a neighbour, had bought a pair of trainers in a Dundee shop the next day and gone to a meeting with his boss. The police initially thought he couldn't be involved until they tested the timeline and established that he could have driven Linda's car to Manchester and returned to secure his alibis at the given times. 6 months later, close to where police had searched for Linda's remains, a dog walker came across Linda in Ladybank Woods on the 11th of February 1988.
Aww.
Shep's lead was still in situ around Linda's neck, and it was determined that she had been strangled to death. In court, the prosecution claimed that Hunter had killed Linda and dumped her body in nearby woods before returning home. He had tea with his sister-in-law Sandra, attended a work night out, and received a lift home. They stated that instead of going to bed, however, Hunter donned a blonde wig and drove Linda's car to Manchester before returning by train. He then went shopping in Dundee and retained his receipt for a pair of trainers and a haircut by way of providing an alibi. It was claimed that the pair left around 10:45 a.m. on Friday the 21st of August with the intention of visiting Linda's parents, but that Hunter pulled off the road at some point following an argument and killed Linda with Shep's lead. He then removed Shep's collar and let the dog out in the middle of nowhere, and then assuming that Linda's body was concealed in the boot of the car because obviously that's where her earring was found. But I couldn't confirm that definitively. Yeah. Andrew Hunter was subsequently arrested and charged with killing his wife by strangulation. The trial took place in July 1988 at the High Court in Dundee before Lord Brand. A report from the Courier stated the following. DC Edward James Joseph Devlin told how he and a colleague found a dog collar in a laundry basket during the search of Hunter's home. The evidence was crucial because Hunter's wife never allowed her dog out without a collar. This was the collar Hunter removed from Shep when he drove off and abandoned the dog. It showed that he was directly linked to the removal of Shep's collar and was proof Hunter was there when Mrs. Hunter was killed. On the 2nd of August 1988, Hunter was found guilty of murder and sentenced to life imprisonment. He subsequently appealed his conviction, which was denied, and died of a heart attack in prison in July 1993 after having served only 5 years for Linda's death. Linda's case was originally mentioned alongside the Susie Lamplugh case, the estate agent who went missing in London, as it was initially thought the two cases could be linked. The following excerpt is from a Daily Mail article which raises serious questions and concerns about what else Hunter may have been involved in prior to Linda's and ultimately his own death. On March 21st, 1979, the body of 18-year-old prostitute Carol Lannan, you'll remember, Emma, that was a case that I covered, was found stripped and strangled in Dundee's Templeton Woods. Her clothes were later discovered 80 miles away on the banks of the River Don. A description was issued of a man, late 20s, slim, pale, with sideburns and a moustache, seen picking her up in a red car. Police later released a photo fit which bears a startling similarity to Hunter, who switched between a heavy moustache and a full beard. After a second woman's body was found dumped in the same woods the next year, the cases became known as the Templeton Woods murders, although the police never formally linked them. Detectives were certain different men were responsible for each murder, and one veteran reporter, Alexander McGregor, who has written extensively on the cases, insists Hunter killed Miss Lannan. In a television interview, Mr. McGregor said he was told by the mother of a prostitute who associated with Hunter they met while he was a social worker at a children's home. He said, "Carol Lannan was a young prostitute, and I think it's possible that he met her in the course of his duties, and in fact, he bore an uncanny resemblance in the photo fit to the man that the police were looking for." Hunter was never interviewed over Miss Lannan's murder, and in October 1984, he met fellow social worker Linda Cairns. Further on, the excerpt reads, "In his book, The Law Killers, True Crime from Dundee, Mr. McGregor writes that neighbours came to reassess their views about Christine's death," that was his ex-wife, "once they learned of his murderous intentions towards his second wife. For nearly 2 years, they did not doubt the account of that pre-Christmas tragedy. Then, as other dramas began to unfold, the curtain twitchers started to whisper their doubts to each other. Although police insist that the circumstances of her death were fully investigated, the suggestion is that Hunter not only killed his second wife, but also his first." So if you're interested in reading more about the case and Alexander McGregor's views, you can actually buy his book, The Law Killers, True Crime from Dundee. It's currently available on Amazon for £2.37 for the Kindle edition. It doesn't seem to be in stock in the independent bookshops in and around Edinburgh that I checked, unfortunately, but you might be able to order it in or buy it from like the likes of Waterstones.
I actually have read it.
Have you?
Yeah, so I have actually read that book because I read it as part of my research for the Robbie McIntosh case.
Interesting.
And also I was planning on revisiting it, see if there was any other Dundee murders that we'd like to cover. So yeah, if you get it and have a read, let us know. I was going to do that anyway, but let us know if there's any that you want us to do a bit more digging into that we could cover.
Definitely. So, yeah.
Bargain as well. What, £2? £2.30? Can't buy books.
£2.37 for Kindle edition, yeah.
Yeah, that's fab. But yeah, no, it was really well written, actually. Really enjoyed it. There's some cracking books about Scottish true crime out there, but they are mostly independently published or not that well known. But you can usually find an electronic version.
So there you go. That was the case of Linda Hunter.
Fab. Yeah, it's right from the start when you were saying about him. And I don't believe for a split second at all that his first wife hung herself.
Yeah, definitely a suspect case.
Not buying it. Seems like an all-round scumbag. He can get in our bin.
Yep.
The bin that we've got of all the people that are just awful.
Yep,
he rubbish. Can get in it.
Get in the bin.
We're not interested.
Yeah, 100%.
Horrible. Really horrible.
So hopefully you have a lighthearted story for us, something to give us a bit of a giggle.
I do. And actually it will hopefully cheer us up, because I know this isn't the most tragic part of the case, but the fact that the dog was never found, I find really, really upsetting.
to be honest, I didn't want to say, but I was like, when I was researching the case, I was like, but what happened to the dog?
I know. Do you know that there's a website that you can put in films that you're going to watch and it'll tell you if the dog dies before you watch it?
I would like to know the name of this website, because I can't look at those bits.
Okay, it's literally just called www.doesthedogdie.com.
Okay.
Well, Does the Dog Die was created to warn people about distressing scenes in movies, TV shows, video games and other media. So that it's not even just TV, it's like video games and stuff as well. And yeah, so if you are a wee bit sensitive, like we can be when it comes to animals, then there you go. So yeah, this'll hopefully cheer us up. I'm sure what actually happened was it turned into a bit of a Disney film and ran off into the woods, made friends with, like, I don't know, a deer.
A fox, perhaps,
maybe some rabbits, and they all lived happily ever after. Yeah. And yeah, that's definitely what happened.
Yeah, that's what
so I'm yeah. So I've got a couple of weird laws about a place that lead into another fun fact. So are you aware of Svalbard in Norway?
I am not.
Svalbard is a island that's owned by Norway, but it's not connected directly. It's a beautiful place. It's technically a desert because there is no rainfall. You can see the northern lights during the day, and it is, as you can imagine, very, very bleak and cold all the time. Because of that, you are not allowed to die on Svalbard. So because of the permafrost, they can't bury you, and bodies won't decompose because they'll just be frozen. So there would be, there was a small cemetery, but it has stopped accepting newcomers, is how they phrased it, in the 1950s. One of the reasons is that the preserved bodies might still contain traces of the flu virus, like a special flu virus that killed miners before, and any other illnesses that we may not know about anymore.
Oh, wow.
So you're not allowed to die on Svalbard. Additionally, you are not allowed to be born on Svalbard. Whenever someone's pregnant, they have a few weeks before the due date, they go to the mainland to give birth because there is no real healthcare there. And yeah, but there are children living there, but they're just not born there. They're born on the mainland. So that's interesting. Another weird law is that cats are banned on Svalbard, which is a bit sad, but there's a reason for it. It was decided that they were very susceptible to rabies and echinococcosis, which is a type of tapeworm from the foxes and rats on the island. However, there is a exception, but her name is Kesha. She is a ginger cat, but she was registered as an Arctic fox to get around the law.
Oh.
So Kesha lives in Barentsburg nowadays, but yeah, she's the only cat that's ever been on Svalbard since that law came into place, and she is technically an Arctic fox, even though she's actually not a fox. That's just how they got past it. So there you go.
Interesting.
Kesha, the Arctic fox masquerading as a cat, or the other way around, you decide.
I love it. So, how big is this island? Do you know?
It's teeny tiny. 61,000 square kilometres.
That means nothing to me.
I don't know how long it would take to drive around it. Let's have a look. Things to do. Let's visit. So it's in the Arctic Ocean, halfway between Norway and the North Pole. I can't really tell how big it is, but there is some lovely, beautiful pictures of the Northern Lights and some walruses. There's polar bears there. So it's a little bit of a dangerous place to live.
Sounds
it. Let me see. Oh, it looks like it's a weird shape, but it's kind of similar. It's actually kind of similar size to Ireland. That's quite big.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's probably about the size of Scotland, actually, now that I'm looking at it. But yeah, it looks like a really unusual place. But because it is such an unusual place and it has these challenges, that's why they've got these really unusual laws. Mm. Additionally, there's a global sea default built into the bedrock of the airport, which is called Longyearbyen. I don't really know what that means. I don't know if it's a Norwegian word. If anyone can enlighten me, please do. But there's almost 1 million seed samples from all over the world stored there, with a capacity for up to four times that. So that if there was a major global disaster, they could theoretically help humanity reboot and plant all the things that we eat and grow and have in our ecosystem.
Wow.
So a really fascinating place. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they have much in the way of tourism.
They do. You can visit. I've just there's like a welcome to Svalbard kind of thing. There are 47 national parks, but they're very mountainous. 60% of the Svalbard land is protected because of that. But there was like loads of mountains, glaciers, little mini islands. It's very fragmented. It looks like there's lots of islands coming off it. And less than 10% of the landmass has any vegetation at all because it's mostly covered in rock and ice. So yeah, very cool place. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and or review on your podcast platform of choice. If you'd like to get in contact with us, maybe there's something you want us to cover, or maybe there's just you want to have a chat, you can email us. It's info@murdershespoke.net. We're also on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for Murder She Spoke Podcast. Thanks again, and we'll see you in a week. Bye.